In a pre-title sequence, Coordinator Vanso of the Celestial Intervention Agency arrives on Gallifrey with an urgent message for the President. An army is massing just outside of Gallifrey's transduction barriers. This army has a control over time far more advanced than that of the Time Lords, and they have rendered all time travel craft inoperable. The modifications needed for Vansell's TARDIS to land have done serious damage to its systems, and it may not fly again. There is only one Time Lord who has been unaffected. The Doctor.
Hello, I'm Matthew Jessup.
And I'm Sam Scarnati.
And welcome to the Technicolor Dreamcoats podcast.
We are going through and reviewing every Big Finish Doctor Who audio from the main monthly series, including the subscriber specials and Doctor Who magazine releases, from July of 1999 all the way to whenever the hell we catch up.
Yes. To start off, we started, logically, from the beginning. The Sirens of Time.
God, I wish it was as cool as that sounded.
Yeah, unfortunately, yes. It's not.
Yeah, it's not very good, really.
I mean, you can kind of forgive it for being a first, and it had a lot of potential. However, at the very end of the day, it just doesn't make sense.
Yeah. A brief summary of this. There are going to be spoilers. The first three episodes of The Sirens of Time each focus on a single Doctor. Episode 1 is the 7th Doctor. That would be me on the cover. Episode 2 has the 5th. That's Matt. And Episode 3 has our namesake, the 6th Doctor, who we just couldn't harm.
We love him and his coat.
Hell yeah. No companions are heard during this story, although the 5th mentions Tegan and Turlough as being in the TARDIS. The same general series of events occurs in each episode. The Doctor lands where he did not intend. He receives the same garbled psychic transmission from Vansell and picks up no useful information. Explores his surroundings, meets a young woman, all of whom have similar names, and finds himself locked out of his TARDIS, and finds himself in some horrible mortal peril from which he never actually escapes by the end of the episode. So you can probably tell the first three episodes are all set up for the real action, which is all crammed in episode 4. The phrase Sirens of Time isn't even heard until the episode 3 cliffhanger. All three Doctors are transferred to Gallifrey after it has been invaded by the Knights of Valicia. We're referenced several times throughout the story by the Temperon from the 6th Doctor episode. The Doctors have noticed similarities between Knight Captain Elena and the women they've encountered in the previous episodes. The Temperon reveals that Elena slash Helen slash Ellie slash Liana, in order of appearance, are all manifestations of the Time Sirens, creatures that feed off the energy released by disruptions in the timelines. Liana then explains how all her incarnations have manipulated the Doctor into deviating from established history, both to feed the Sirens of Time and to benefit the Knights of Valicia. I guess the real problem is they spend almost an hour and a half setting all this up, and the resolution just doesn't measure up. Plus, the fact that the ending is all about restoring the timeline by making sure the Doctor doesn't do anything makes the story feel all anticlimactic. The Sirens of Time is an hour and a half of setup and absolutely no resolution. Well, okay, there is a resolution, but it's shit. Okay? It's basically the Harry Potter 6 of Big Finish audios.
He means the movie version. He's never read the books.
I read some of the books, okay?
Okay.
There is some of the books. This is an adventure so stupid, it's amazing they chose it for the first story. It's a multi-doctor story where the doctors never meet until the last 40 minutes.
I think you're being a bit too hard on the story. I think that, I mean, this is my first Big Finish, so I came in pretty much blind. I have not watched a lot of the old Doctor stories. I've seen maybe half of season 5, series 5 of the new series.
You've certainly never seen any of the doctors we deal with in this story.
Yeah, none of them. I mean, I've seen two of the Cybermen, but he's not in this. So, and going in blind, I think you're being a bit too hard. I won't say that it's terrible or shit, as you put it. However, it's disappointing, and it really could have been so much better. It had potential wasted.
Very disappointing. The first three episodes are the 7th, 5th, and 6th Doctors, in that order, going through separate events, but essentially the same adventure. And the 4th episode is an attempt to resolve it all in some way that makes sense. And it kind of makes sense, but it's also stupid. No, that summarizes it perfectly.
Okay, we're doing...
The story is resolved with the Doctor doing nothing.
I think that's the point, is that sometimes you do something and sometimes you do nothing, but it was handled in such a way that just was not an entertaining listen. Let's just start from the beginning, part one. I would say that the opening was interesting. I mean, I was definitely drawn into the story with the whole, you know, red alert, you know, everything is going wrong bit. However, there's one thing that I noticed, and this is a running theme throughout all of part one of the story. It just was not emotional enough. Here, everything is going to pot, as they say, and no one is making a big deal out of it. I mean, it should sound like, oh, duh, everything's going wrong, oh, no, run, red alert, but no, they sound like, oh, okay, well, the ship's going down, that's a bit of a shame.
And the whole plan's been invaded,
oh,
and the
no.
president's been shot.
Oh, yeah, dearie
me. Are those biscuits ready yet?
Yes, shall we have another cup of tea? Along with this, this is another problem that I found with all of part one. It gets a lot better in 2, 3, and 4, but not that much better. It's hard to visualize. I know that audios are about using your imagination. However, even in books, where we're expected to use our imaginations, there is a bit of description so that we can think of, you know, what the place we're supposed to be in looks like. So, in the part one, the Doctor crash lands somewhere. I'm not sure where. It sounded like a forest or a marsh.
I think it was supposed to be a jungle planet.
Yeah, a jungle, maybe a jungle planet. It's not clear. And then he's walking, and I assume he's walking among trees. You can't really tell. So he sets off on a journey, you know, to try and find a clearing or something, and he hears the sound of a cry for help. As he's walking, suddenly, he hears the voice of a hag woman alien called Ruthly.
Yes, an awful, hateful character.
Yeah.
Just awful.
The problem with that is that we're not really sure. Is she just standing there? Is she calling from a house? Did she jump from behind a tree?
It kind of sounds like the first and third, kind of.
Yeah, it's really hard to visualize where things are going.
Well, having heard this story before, and having seen Sylvester McCoy before in Doctor Who, I thought it was kind of easy to visualize.
Well, that's for you, but did you know where he crash landed? Did you know what the hag woman looked like?
I just kind of filled it all in.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
Maybe I imagined it was maybe a hillside on a ridge, like the hag woman was an... Well, she's a hag woman.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if she was alien or supposed to look human, so that might have just been a problem for me, but it was something that took me out of the story. And I think visualization is a really big deal. While we are supposed to know what characters look like, we shouldn't have problems identifying settings. For example, in your radio dramas, if it says, okay, we are now in the bank, you know, or okay, Uncle Arthur, I'll be at the bank. And it's a simple setting. Like, it's just a simple word, bank. However, we immediately fill it in with, okay, this is a bank. It's no longer a blank slate. It is something we can latch onto with our minds. And I think that is very important. And in this, at the very least, the first story, first part, did not have enough to latch onto with your mind. But that's just me. Moving on. Transitions. That's another thing I've noticed about the whole first part. Transitions from one scene to another are strange. Like, I find it, I can't tell when they're switching from scene to scene. So the doctor, he goes and tries to find the girl who's, you know, screaming and yelling, and he finds her. And
hooray!
Again, I'm noticing this lack of emotion. I told you, it'd be a theme. Like, here's this girl, I don't know, maybe it's just me, but here's this girl, you know, trapped in a bog or a marsh or quicksand. And she's, you know, he gets her out and she's not like, oh my god, I just died. This is awful. She's like, oh, okay, I'm not in the quicksand anymore. This is good. Okay, thank you.
The problem with this story is there's so much going on in it, and yet so little actually happens.
Yeah, that's very true.
Yeah.
Another problem I found with the whole lack of emotion. Elenia, that's the girl he rescues. She takes to him too quickly. I mean, I know that she's just been rescued by him, but, and while I suppose at the very end, once it's revealed that she's a siren, it makes sense. But if I were the doctor, I don't know, I would be pretty suspicious of a girl who's just like, oh, okay, you have a TARDIS and it's shaped like a police box, that's pretty cool, okay, whatever. Again, she shows no effects. She nearly died twice in the last few minutes, and she's just, okay, you know, la 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 la, okay.
That did produce my favorite line of the episode. What is this, the planet suicide?
Absolutely. And then it ends on a cliffhanger of them all trapped in a shed with a former war criminal getting hunted down by a big bloodthirsty army who say that there should be no witnesses.
And then it just skips right along to Peter Davison.
Yeah, part two. It is not resolved in part two. It just skips to a completely different doctor wondering, you know, did I miss a part? Is the ending cut off? No, it's a cliffhanger.
With no resolution. And the resolution
until
it does,
the end.
And the resolution it does get in the beginning of episode four is crap.
Yeah.
Part two. Fifth Doctor's tracking a temporal anomaly. He lands in the cargo hold of his ship. He steps outside to check it, closes the doors, gets the psychic message, finds out, whoops, he can't get back in. Gets discovered by this girl named Helen, and turns out they're in the First World War, and they get captured and taken aboard
a German submarine.
And the TARDIS gets blown out into the ocean.
Yep. It's his magical box.
The Fifth Doctor somehow manages to convince the captain to go back for it. He still can't get in, and he's...
Something I've noticed, when you're coming into part two, you hear of a character called Ruthie. He's just a red shirt, just a random soldier in the German army. However, this provides a problem, because in the first part, there's a character called Ruthie, who is totally different, who is the disgusting hag woman. And couple this with Ella, Ellen, Helen, Elenia, of all being the same person, then that is a big problem, because here you have a red herring and a not red herring of people with similar names. As I'm listening to part two, I notice that there's no connection between it and part one. I'm confused.
That's the main problem with this story.
That's the problem. I mean, here I'm waiting to hear how the doctor, who is trapped in the shed with the war criminal and the angry army, how he gets out of this big conundrum of he's about to get executed.
Bum, bum, bum.
And instead, it skips to a completely different form of doctor landing in his TARDIS and then going aboard a German submarine. That said, this is much better than part one was.
Damn right.
The emotion is there.
There was that little bit about how the translator only worked for the doctor and didn't work for Helen.
That was an inconsistency with the series.
It's kind of weird.
And that made Helen a very annoying character.
Aside from all of her personality traits, which already make her a very annoying character.
Yeah, basically, she cannot speak German, so she always has to ask the doctor, "Ooh, what's he saying? What's he saying?" Just a very flat character. She doesn't do anything except say that her name's Helen and ask the doctor what the Germans are saying. And she's annoying. I mean, she didn't need to say it over and over and over again. We understand that she cannot speak German. Say it once, and then the doctor can translate her once the time isn't terrible. There, I mean, there was, she started to say, ooh, what's he saying, what's he saying, when this German is pointing a gun at the doctor and about to kill him. That's a bad timing, to say the least. And it just...
Again, if she's a siren, she...
Yes, she's a siren, and she's supposed to be ruining all the doctor's plans. The problem with that is that we don't know this until the last part. And that just makes Helen...
absolutely worthless character.
Absolutely worthless. Even the fridge brilliance, you know, of knowing, finally understanding at the very end that she was meant to be that bad, does not help. You don't want a character to be so annoying you just want to turn the audio off, even if it's a villain. Something also I noticed about Helen, she also accepts what the doctor has to say about the TARDIS and how this man is possessed and how someone's controlling him. How she accepts his story with pretty much no hints of skepticism. Again, that makes sense at the very end when you realize that she's the siren. However, at the time, it just feels suspicious, and I don't mean suspicious as in the way, we should be suspecting this character. Because other than that, to me at least, there are no hints that we should be suspecting her of being anything than what she says she is.
And what she is kind of stupid.
Yeah, in the it's, again, a bad payoff.
Yes.
Oh, and also, I want to say, one of the greatest lines, it's like, you put Noel in my ship, now I'll put Noel in you. It reminds me of those images, have you seen them, of the kid from the yearbook with the karate outfit, and he's like, and they put the words on him, the image macros, it's like, you know, he said I couldn't wear my karate uniform to school, so I wore it to his funeral.
Take them to the security kitchen.
Yes, take them to the security kitchen. No, it's one of those ridiculous, just over-dramatic, over-the-top lines that you cannot take seriously. And while I understand that part of the appeal of Doctor Who, I mean, you know, I've been watching it, is part of it is kind of the cheesiness combined with the seriousness, that was just too much ridiculousness for my taste. It was hilarious. Other than that, I can say that I enjoyed Part 2 for what it was, and I enjoyed it a lot more than Part 1.
Okay, wait a minute. I just realized something I wanted to mention about Part 2.
Yeah?
Okay, apparently Van Sel is supposed to be helping the Doctor, but he has this whole thing during Part 2 where he suddenly wants to kill him.
Yeah, it's very inconsistent. Van Sel is supposed to help him because he's the Time Lord, and then in Part 2 he sounds like he's trying to kill the Doctor. It's just very inconsistent. And
because
yet,
we need a villain syndrome, and
yeah,
we haven't revealed our big baddie yet.
Yeah, we need someone to be a red herring, but it could have been handled so much better. And that's just one of the string of problems of things that just don't make sense in this story.
After all this, are you amazed there are 145 of these?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, if the first one was this...
God, thank God for the Marion conspiracy, or this would have sunk like a stone.
Yep. Okay, Part 3.
Part 3, I think, was probably the best episode of all of them. Because it's just Colin Baker being Colin Baker.
Oh, yeah.
And
at the very beginning...
That's awesome.
At the very beginning, I want to say something I liked, and it was a nice change from the last two parts. Exposition. They actually explain what's going on.
No!
Yeah! I know, isn't it crazy? What a novel concept.
Holy crap.
Not having your viewers left in confusion?
Nick Briggs, take note.
Yeah. And that, because the other two, they just drop you in the middle of the action blind, and I was completely lost, and it took a lot of time for me to understand what the hell was going on.
Also, that said, I don't like Colin Baker's voice in this episode.
Really?
Yeah, it's very indistinct. Like, later on, even two episodes from now, in Whispers of Terror, it's very distinct, very Sixth Doctor. This just sounds like Colin Baker walked into the room and started talking.
As someone who doesn't have a lot of experience with Colin Baker, I found him passable. I found him perfectly fine. However, I'm sure that I can understand where you're coming from.
You'll see.
Yeah, there were some funny lines in this, unintentionally. There was, the TARDIS is being dragged!
to the Kurgan Wonder.
The Kurgan Wonder. Another thing that took me out of the episode, they say time distortion a lot. Time distortion, time distortion.
This huge shot of time distortion heading right for us.
And they never say what it is.
It's time distortion.
I know it's time distortion, but it's implied as to the meaning. It doesn't say, you know, why is this bad, why is this good. It's just time distortion. The fact that they said it so much just kept taking me out of the narrative.
Time distortion.
Time distortion. Okay, the twist where Ellie shoots and they all end up in the Kurgan Wonder, that it was handled very well, which was a pleasant surprise, because a lot of things, obviously, as you've heard, weren't handled well in this story.
At all.
But the big twist, which I suppose is what really counts in part three, was handled well. So I have to commend them for that.
Mm-hmm.
And another thing of them ending up in the Kurgan Wonder, that leads nicely into part four, which gives us our very first cliffhanger that actually continues and isn't just a lame attempt at a fake cliffhanger.
And we actually get the first mention of the title.
Yep.
An hour and a half in.
The Sirens of Time.
Unlike Sam here, I don't have much of a problem with them not dropping the title until the end. However, they just don't hint at anything. That's a big thing. There's a severe lack of foreshadowing.
There's a severe lack of foreshadowing and plot. This is one of those weird stories where there's both no plot at all and way too much plot.
It really didn't need...
It really has to be heard to be believed.
Yeah, they didn't need 2 hours of basically fluff.
Yes.
There's a lot of fluff.
It's an insane amount of fluff.
At the beginning of part four, the doctors, in the first three parts, all end up floating around in the Kurgan Wonder, and they find themselves. I will say that their chemistry in this is fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
They are excellent. I mean, and that is really... If they had bad chemistry, then I would have called this a bad story. But the three actors had fantastic chemistry. The characters had great chemistry together, and they made for some great scenes in part four. Anyway, all three doctors are floating around the Kurgan Wonder. We do not find out how they get out of their predicaments. How did the doctor in part one get out of execution by an army? How did the doctor in part two, you know, get out of the submarine predicament? We don't know.
Predicament? It's how did he get out of drowning?
Yeah, how did he not drown? We don't know.
Temperon did it.
Yeah, that's lazy. Lazy storytelling. Just saying, okay, so here we have a cliffhanger. How do we wrap it up? Oh, wizard did it. Oh, okay, that's cool. It's magic.
I believe that's known as the Russell T. Davies School of Writing.
I can forgive the roughness for being a first time of, you know, their first audios. I mean, there's going to be a lot of roughness in this, and this is our first podcast. But that makes sense, you know, so I can give them some slack. Okay, so here they are in death camps. The Time Lords, all of the Time Lords, have been captured by Knights of Elysia, and here they are in death camps. And I don't know, it's just like, okay, Nazis, yay, let's just throw in some Nazis. And it's lazy to me. It's lazy. I know that there are archetypes. Yeah, suddenly Nazis. And it just... To me, it does not make sense. I know it's supposed to be a big, shocking swerve, Vince Russo style, but just like Vince Russo, none of the swerves make sense. For those not in the know, Vince Russo is a writer who is known for his plot twists that make no sense. Continuing with the Nazi comparisons, here they are in a shower room, and this shower revitalizes the Velisha, because the Velisha... They, under their armor, they have this horrible skin condition that can only be, they can only be kept living by taking the Time Lord's life force and using it to shower.
Yeah, they never really explain
that. Yeah, again, this is another theme. Lack of explanation of things we're just supposed to take for granted. I'm okay with, you know, forgiving time-traveling consistencies, with forgiving, you know, techno-babble. However, things should be somewhat realistically, I don't know, they shouldn't just be sort of there.
It could be there, but fucking explain it.
Yeah, exactly. Even if you just say, okay, a wizard did it, that's somewhat of an explanation. I know that this might sound a bit hypocritical because of what I originally said about the Temperon magicking them out of their predicaments. But in this case, it's a lot more believable. Say, okay, we use a supernatural force to suck the life force out of the Time Lords and shower it on ourselves. Okay, that makes sense. It's the power of science. Stand back. I'm going to do science.
Only the magic of science, Barry.
Exactly, and those are, even if they're half-assed explanations, they are explanations, and that makes it all easier to swallow. So here's something that I noticed also. Another thing that they don't explain. They say nexus points. What is a nexus point?
Yeah, that's all just kind of...
It's all just glossed over, and they just say...
The first one, like, with the Seventh Doctor, that kind of makes sense, because it directly involves the Knights of Alicia, but... The one with the Fifth Doctor is a very strange chain that...
Yeah.
That has links over 2,000 years.
Yeah. That a nexus point is a turning point of a territory or a planet. It is something that directly influences their history, something that's a big major event. For example, on Earth, the Lusitania, the ship, and on Earth... the Doctor being in the German submarine means that the German submarine did not sink the Lusitania. The Lusitania harbored a criminal. And just because this criminal didn't die with the Lusitania, he was somehow able to kill Alexander Fleming, which means that penicillin wasn't discovered, which means that antibiotics never existed, which means that everyone died. I have no problem with domino effects. I think that they can be used well. This was not used well. This was just such a stretch that it was just laughable. The twist of this story with the freaking Lusitania sinking. I mean, this is just that butterfly of doom to a million degrees. Because just because one criminal doesn't die, just so happens to murder the guy who invented penicillin, and no one else makes any other antibiotics at all, no one tries to cure things. Okay. Then Lyina turns good.
For about two minutes,
and then she turns evil again, and it's so...
stupid.
I know, the acting is so poor that you wonder how the doctors can even begin to believe her. And yet, they do, don't they? At first? And then suddenly, they free the Temperon, and now the Temperon says that it's sirens, and everything's wrapped up in the 5 minutes, and these sirens want to kill you, so go back to your time, and just ignore everything and go home. So, they send the doctors back to their time, you know, their individual times where they first met Ellie slash Lyina slash Helen slash Alenia. And instead of listening to their cries for help, they ignore them. And they just say, nope, and just walk on. The end. And to me, that is just such a letdown. After this huge amount of story, then you're just going to send them back, and they're just going to do nothing and get back in their TARDIS. And the main story of the whole, you know, everything's getting shut down, and oh no, everything's going wrong for the Time Lords, it doesn't really get resolved. So they ignore the Sirens of Time, who are also...
That's what you should probably do. That's what everyone should probably do.
Yeah, just ignore the Sirens of Time. It's
idiotic and ultimately inconsequential.
Yeah. It's kind of an irony that this whole mess is sorted out by the Doctor ignoring the Sirens of Time, because this is exactly what you should do with this audio. Just don't bother, because overall, it's not a bad story. I know I've riffed on it this whole time. It's not bad. It's just, you're really not going to miss anything by not listening to it. The epitome of not even average, just there.
Coming up in our next episode, Phantasmagoria!
Phantasmagoria! Thank you. I'm Matthew Jessup. That was Sam. And we wish you a good night.